Right, in the podcast booth with Charles S. McVeigh, local songwriter, audio engineer, and celebrity stalker.
Hi, Richard.
How you doing, man?
I'm good.
I only say that, of course, because it's the eve of the Breeders' Show at the Bottleneck, and I believe you tried to introduce yourself to Kim Deal, but it didn't quite go so well.
Well, I ran into her while I was hanging up flyers in the Bottleneck on the stairs and didn't have enough time to actually realize while I was trying to get out of someone's way that that was Kim Deal.
Excellent.
It was, in fact, yes.
You had a good story, too, about The Cure chasing them down in Hayes, Kansas.
Well, you know, I was... somebody else actually chased them down for me or brought me to them, so it wasn't the same, but I did loom at a table for quite a while staring at them before I approached them, yeah.
You were just an unwitting participant in their escapade.
Oh, no, I was very eager to meet them, but I decided to be polite and let them finish their pizza before going and talking to them.
How was it that they end up in Hayes, exactly?
They were on tour. This was in 92, so they were on tour for Wish, and they were going between Denver and St. Louis, and I was living in Hayes, Kansas, where I grew up. And so, let's see, I was 15 at the time, and a friend of mine happened to be eating at Pizza Hut, came and collected me and took me to meet my favorite band.
I believe the way you put it earlier was you were one of those kids.
I was one of those kids. I didn't have the hair or the makeup because that would have been a little extreme in Hayes, Kansas. But I definitely, The Cure were my band for sure, and I had the posters, and I bought everything that I could find, and we used to get cool catalogs called Burning Airlines, which was like an importer, and I would, you know, scan over those and buy whatever I could manage to get with my allowance.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned you kind of geek out when, you know, these formative youth years bands come around. What are some of the other ones that you would just totally flip out, you know, to meet?
Well, I've been really lucky. Living in Lawrence recently, I got to see Sonic Youth at Liberty Hall a couple years ago, which was really cool. Morrissey. I got to go see Morrissey on my 30th birthday, so that was really super cool. But I don't think there was any chance I was going to get to meet him anyway. He's not very social, from what I hear.
Hmm. Well, all right. We are listening to tunes from your six-song EP, and it's called Modern Living. And when did you put it out exactly?
Well, we released it probably in, I guess, August. It was kind of one of those things that it was just once it was manufactured, we sort of put it out at shows. I hadn't been playing as much at that time, so doing a CD release party seemed kind of... that it may not be the big hubbub it was. I kind of slipped it in.
Playing a ton lately, though.
Yeah, I have been. Yeah, mm-hmm. It's been great.
All right, well, let's listen to a little more music.
Sure.
Titled MySpace, and perhaps you could give us a little.
Sure, you want to know the story, because that has a story to it.
I bet it does.
All right,
it's got a title called MySpace.
Yeah, sure. Well, the autobiographical story behind that is my boyfriend and I had broke up, and he had moved to Portland, and we weren't speaking, and so I found myself, you know, stalking him on MySpace.
As we all do.
Yeah, there's a pattern emerging here already in this interview. And so I realized, though, at that time, you know, that somebody else was doing this too, to somebody, you know, because it was such a, you know, you could see who they were talking to and if new friends were added, et cetera. And I know he was doing the same thing to me too. I find this out later. But Anyway, so I wrote the song, and we recorded it and uploaded it on MySpace with two other songs on Valentine's Day, and then that was his Valentine's gift. And we were actually talking again by that time.
But yeah.
Hey, it worked. He came back. 2,000 miles, baby.
Really?
Yeah.
Still together?
Yeah.
Wow, how about that? Yeah. It's a great story. Yeah. You think the songs had a lot to do with that?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah. Good.
I'm Valentine's sure that's what it was.
Awesome. All right, so tell us, you have a band when you play out. Is it Eric Kessinger and Max Paley?
Correct.
All right, Eric plays drums, Max plays bass. Couldn't get them in here on short notice, but we want to give them their props.
And they're great guys. Yeah. Both very talented musicians.
Mm-hmm. And how did your current ensemble come about? I know you're actively involved as an engineer in the area. And
Eric kind of fell into the loop by doing the drums for the record. And then that's actually how it came about, I guess. I brought them in because I knew them. And I brought them in to do session work. And so Max did the bass tracks for the record, and Eric did the drum tracks. I did the rest of the record myself. And then I got offered this Bottleneck gig, and I was like, well, let's see if they want to play it live. So they were like, okay, we'll do that, and then just started booking more shows after that, and I do about half of my gigs solo and half of them with the band.
Cool. Well, before we lose the second number, let's listen to it.
Sure.
What was the title of that one?
Sir.
And could you tell us a little bit about that one?
Sure. It is a love song from the viewpoint of a submissive.
Care to expand on?
People ask me where I got the idea. I'm not exactly sure. I know I was watching a lot of South Park at the time, and what the joke was that it was Mr. Slave's love song. But as far as there having a lot of like relevance or significance in my life, I think that the song itself has probably brought more of that about than any precursor to writing it. But I've gotten a lot of interesting responses from that song. I think that it's very frank and it comes across, I think, sometimes a little confrontational with people who aren't really expecting that. But I know that I had gotten kind of an unfavorable review from The Pitch because of that particular track. But my intent was sincere when I wrote the song, and I wrote it with the lyrics in mind of, I wanted it to come across the way I thought someone in that situation, the way they would say things. Like terms like daddy's whore or something. That's not something I would say as part of my regular vocabulary, but it seemed to fit the song.
Yeah.
And somebody you don't hear from a lot, people kind of, our society like undervalues the underdog or the submissive role when it's, that kind of relationship is a mutually dependent thing. I also felt like the dominant submissive thing kind of is an element of every relationship, period. Not even just emotional relationships, but even if you look at any kind of social interaction with other people, your coworkers, your boss, etc., there's always that kind of power play. Mm-hmm. It's just very apparent in that situation.
you put a lot of yourself out there, you know, in your music, whether it be, you know, like lyrics speaking from the relationships you just talked about or sexuality, all those things. Was it always that way for you as a songwriter, or was it, you know, a process of becoming that way?
Well, I think it was definitely something I cultivated over a period of time. When I was, you know, younger, I played with an angry boy rock band. I found myself, you know, writing kind of, you know, more vague lyrics. But when I started doing solo stuff, I feel like there's a real lack of out artists who write music that is also as open as they are about their sexuality. I think there seems to be a lot of gay artists who kind of mooch off of the gay community but leave their songs vague, you know, so that it can have a broader appeal to the people, and I don't waste my time.
Yeah.
That. I mean, I look at it this way. I listened to songs written about women by men and women written by women about men and vice versa. Either way, I could still relate to all of those tunes. And my objective was just to be honest and speak about what I know. And I'm not heterosexual, so.
Yeah.
That's kind of, you know, and I don't think that by any means that I'm trying to, you know, put off anybody. In that stance, you know, it's not supposed to be exclusive.
If you can't take the heat, get out of the kitchen.
I guess. This is 2008. I mean, come on.
I think I just summed up everything with one trite cliche. And it's such a sad kiss when all you've got left. Mistakes you've made and the things never said, and that keeps us. Okay, I believe this is the last track we're going to listen to off the Modern Living EP. Maybe you could tell us a little bit about it before we move forward.
Well, that was another one of the three songs that we uploaded for the gift, the Valentine's Day gift. So I guess it's relative. It goes back to that same story. Boyfriend leaves me, and so I'm sad. But it's been a very popular song of ours. That's probably the most popular.
I have time.
reaching back a little bit further into your catalog here, and is this your first release?
This would actually be my second.
Okay.
This Satellite is the name of the song, and it's off a record I did called Swallow in 2003, and this was all recorded at home, and this was like the precursor to me going to Arizona for audio engineering school.
Okay. What made you take that leap?
Well, I had started, you know, like a lot of people, just with a four-track and engineering my bands that I played in, my own stuff when I was younger, and it just occurred to me at one point that I was always going to be working in music, whether I made any money at it or not, and so I wanted to pursue a career because I didn't want to wait tables anymore.
Yeah. Cool.
And so that's how I did it.
Now you're working out of Black Lodge.
I work out there as a freelance engineer.
Freelancer.
Mm-hmm.
Cool. What are some of the things you've done lately?
Recently I worked with a band called Meridian, and I've been working on the new Lonnie Fisher record, and I've been spending a lot of time actually just working on my own stuff, trying to get ready for a new record that we're recording out there as well.
Cool. And you play keys for Lonnie Fisher's...
I play keys for Lonnie.
For The Funeral, right?
Yeah, for The Funeral, yes.
Is that the name of the band? Yeah.
Yeah, well, we drive around in a hearse, so
right.
It was appropriate.
Absolutely, absolutely. Do you see some similarities between yourself and Lonnie as
songwriters? Well... We both probably were influenced a lot by the music of the 80s, I would say, probably because that would have been, you know, around the time that we were coming to consciousness. And I think that the first stuff that sets you off with something or with an idea, the first time you're really inspired, that always sets with you. And I can hear new ideas and new bands all the time, but the music that I truly, truly love, that I always come back to, probably, you know, as a comfort zone, is the music that I listened to in my early teens. So, or I guess probably just my teenage years in general. But, yeah, we have a lot of similar musical interests. We're both singer-songwriters. Lonnie's a great musician. I think we both respect each other a lot, and that's probably why the relationship works the way it does.
You kind of mentioned, like, new wave stuff.
And yeah.
What exactly falls under that umbrella in your mind?
Just, you know, the typical bands, I guess, you would think of from that time. The Cure, The Smiths. I mean, sometimes I don't know if new wave's exactly the right term for it, but I went maybe old school alternative. You know, I listened to Jane's Addiction, The Pixies, The Breeders.
First wave alternative.
Yeah, you know, before Nevermind broke.
Probably not actually first, but...
Well, you know, there was a time when alternative music, you would watch shows like 120 Minutes, or, I mean, you know, I was in Hayes, so I had no music scene. But you would see, you know, 120 Minutes or Postmodern MTV, and all those bands sounded different. It'd be like the Sugar Cubes, and then, you know, Jane's Addiction, then Soul Asylum, and none of them sounded the same. And then Nevermind came out, and it broke, and grunge broke, and then everything started sounding the same after a couple of years. It was very frustrating to me.
You have an upcoming gig with They Might Be Giants as well.
I do, on my birthday, in fact.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Hey, your birthday seems to be a good day.
It's a good day.
Saw Morrissey on your 30th birthday.
Yeah. I think that birthdays should be good days for people.
Yes. We hope.
Yeah.
We hope.
No, but this will be a great gig. It's at the Beaumont in Kansas City, which is an awesome venue. I've seen some really cool bands there, too. And I'm looking forward to playing with They Might Be Giants. I think they'll be fun.
Yeah. And tell us also about the Bottleneck show that's coming up.
Yeah, I'll be playing at the Bottleneck on next Friday, or I guess this coming Friday, with the Cal Eckert Band. And I'm actually opening that show.
Awesome. Do you know this Cal Eckert fellow?
I don't know him personally, but I've listened to some of his music on his MySpace. The people at Pipeline hooked me up with this.
Cool. What are some of your favorite atmospheres in Lawrence? I know you sometimes play solo at Henry's upstairs, which obviously has a much different vibe than, you know, the Bottleneck or
sure.
the Jackpot.
Well, I also have a show coming up at Henry's, too, on the 13th.
Mm-hmm.
Henry's is cool because it's got a nice, intimate atmosphere, and, I mean, people are, you know, probably about 2 or 3 feet away from you when you're playing, so... Which is really cool. I got used to that, and I'd rather have people be close than far away, but, you know, the Bottleneck shows are always fun, too, and we played at the Jackpot recently. That's been... Those are probably my three top favorites.
Yeah, cool. This current one that we're listening to, what is it?
It's called Muse, and this is actually a song that's not really available anywhere, but
okay.
It's... I play it on my MySpace sometimes. I have it on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's check it out.
Sure.
When I look at your we'll be right back.
So since this song is called Muse, I'll ask you, what are your current muses when you sit down at the piano, or is it mostly piano?
I write everything on piano now.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's where it all starts. Well, most recently I've been working on a new record, and that's actually kind of taken a different turn than my typical stuff. Modern Living was a collection of love songs, and this new record is has got a religious theme in it. So it's kind of about my relationship with God, or lack of that relationship, as it would be. That's currently what's been going on. It's real strange. I didn't intend to do that, and I think that a lot of times, you know, just stuff that's going on in your head kind of comes out when you're writing, and I realized probably about four songs into this that I had stumbled across a reoccurring theme, and so then I probably expanded upon it at that point. I'd been reading some literature. I was reading a book called The History of Homosexuality, which really should be called A Thousand Years of Christian Oppression. And then I was also reading The God Delusion by Dawkins, and I think that those two texts probably inspired a lot of that. Plus, I've read Nietzsche for years, so my relationship with Christianity in particular has always been, I don't know,
do you have
shaky ground.
A current place of
religious affiliation?
Yeah, yeah.
I'm an atheist.
Yeah, okay. Well, I guess that's the answer I was looking for there.
Yeah.
Did they make a church for that?
No, but I'm sure someone will eventually. There's money to be made.
Yeah. So I think we got like a remix here, right?
We do. This is a Sir remix, and a gentleman who I met via the MySpace is doing these remixes for me in California. His name's Mac, but he actually performs in kind of like an industrial outfit called Seven Repeat. And so he's been doing these really interesting remixes for me. This one in particular I liked because he put it in a minor key, which was funny because the song wasn't recorded in that. And I was blown away when I heard it. I thought it was very cool.
Definitely think you should play that one at the They Might Be Giants show.
I am, but I won't be performing the remix. I'll be actually performing a different remix version of it, kind of.
Cool.
But yeah, no, I really like performing Sir. I was very nervous when I initially started doing it, but, even if you get a bad response, or maybe like most people are just confused because they can't believe that's what they just heard, you know, so... But it's a great song to perform. I mean, it's really fun. I realized at the point where I was like, felt like I was nervous about it, that meant I needed to go do it even more. Because if I find that I'm afraid of something I think is kind of stupid, then I force myself to do it so I can get over it. And now I don't have a problem performing that at all. I think my parents might come to that show, so they might find that interesting. I think Modern Living was a racier record than anything I'd probably done before. And, when I was home, you know, my parents have a collection of all the stuff I've done. And so I was kind of just slipping it in there with it. And they were like, oh, you've got a new CD? And I was like, yeah. So, you know, I mean, the cover's a little racy just in that, but, you know, they just always, you know, they're just parents, you know, they don't think anything weird. They listen to it, but I don't think they pay any attention to the lyrics. Or
I'm just so happy that you're creating this lovely music.
I think they're happy that my rent's paid. You know? I mean, parents worry about, you know, the mundane aspects of your life necessarily, not that you're at your creative, you know, high point or something like that. I don't think they think about that way, you know.
Cool. So what do you see for yourself this coming year? What are your
goals and ambitions? Well, we're hopefully going to have the record ready for release by either the end of November or beginning of December. I'm going to be working on it all summer. I've got a tour coming up in July with Christy Stramel, and we're going to be touring around the Midwest region. And in June, I guess I'm kind of going backwards here. In June, I'll be performing at several different gay prides in Kansas, and then I've got one in Missouri too, and just playing shows, making music, you know.
Have you done that before, Pride festivals?
I did. I've done a couple. I did one back in 2001, I think, with a different group that I was performing with at that time, and then I did a thing called Out in Westport. So that was kind of a similar thing, I guess. But the Pride festival should be really cool. It'll be fun.
Okay. Thanks for coming by, man.
No, thank you for having me.
Absolutely. And we have basically a live track here to close out. Title of this one is...
This is called Toby, and it is a song about based off of the television show Oz.
All right. Here you go. Inside of you and how it is tomorrow.
Until we can burn together.